Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/thisweekingeek. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and I'm one of your many tour guides this week. I'm Mike the Birdman Daw, but I'm not alone as we quest across Isla Nublar. I'm joined by my favorite new friend, one of the hosts of Movie Madness,
Andrew Roebuck.
And of course, I love my good old friend, my guy who keeps me down the earth and reminds me just how funny or annoying life can be.
I do. Ryan the Uneven Flow.
That took you a little bit off guard, didn't it?
Apparently.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I thought I was one of the more up of all of us. Jeez.
That's what I like about you, Ryan. I never quite know what you're going to say next. But any guys, we are sponsored by, this time, by offworlddesigns.com. Be sure to check out all their really cool stuff and use promo code BROHOOF to get 10% off your entire order. Also, gameaccess.ca, noblenight.com, oneupyourlife.com, sfi.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club, and bigandtallmart.com. Don't forget to use code GEEK10 on checkout for 10% off of orders, $50 or more. And lastly, but certainly not least, audible.com, where you can find many great audiobooks, and I've even gotten a few off there. So let's go around the table, starting with Roebuck. What have you been up to since the last time we heard from you?
Well, I've started a new job recently. I've been working with a lot of little kids, and not in a creepy way, keep it safe. And just been keeping it cool. I've finally been catching up on a lot of Game of Thrones, and other than that, not too much.
Good stuff. And Ryan, what about you? Because I usually end up talking to you a couple times a month, but haven't had a chance to catch up with you recently.
Well, I started a new job, and I've been working with little kids. No, wait, sorry. I'm not allowed to do any of that stuff. Not a lot lately. I mean, mostly been gaming. I have seen the new Star Trek, which I will ruin throughout this podcast just for fun. No, I won't. BioShock Infinite took up a good chunk of time as I got horribly addicted to that. Not a whole lot else. Mostly just getting ready for Ottawa Comic Con and attending a lot of the Ottawa Comics events around the city lately, of which there are a lot, which is fantastic.
You know, that's one thing that I've also been doing, is kind of really getting involved with my local comic book shop, notably the Gauntlet in Orangeville. In fact, they might be starting a podcast for us sometime in the next little bit, just sort of talking shop around the shop, so to speak. And hopefully that'll be premiering sometime in the next couple of weeks here on This Week in Geek. I myself haven't been doing a whole lot of video gaming other than Skyrim for the last little bit. I just decided to go on a huge binge of it. I think it's I'm 180 hours in. I'm level 121, and I am the Dragonborn. I love that game so much. And in preparation for the show, I've been playing some of the Jurassic Park video games. There are so many of them. So many of them terrible. But we'll talk about that, because that's the topic of this month's topic show. We're going to be talking about Steven Spielberg and Michael Crichton's amazing franchise, Jurassic Park. The movies, the games, the books, everything. And even some stuff you probably didn't even know about. But before we do, we have to hit you with something where we spared no expense. Here are just the facts.
I only screwed up once this time. Jurassic Park first opened to the world during the month of November in the year 1990. Michael Crichton's novel detailing a visit to a theme park dedicated to recreating long-extinct dinosaurs would dominate the bestsellers list for some time and spawn an entire franchise of films, toys, all the while capturing the imagination of children and adults everywhere. Crichton's novel was inspired by an unused screenplay which detailed the possibility of modern science cloning dinosaurs. His early attempts to detail out the story of a dinosaur theme park met with mixed success, but the final novel was launched to positive reviews from critics. 3 years after the novel, the film, Jurassic Park, launched into theaters worldwide. The movie rights were famously purchased before the completion of the book, with director Steven Spielberg attached to the project early on. The gamble paid off as the film grossed more than $914 million worldwide and became the highest grossing film of all time at that time. After the success of the film, the pressure mounted on Crichton to write a follow-up novel. Having never written a sequel before, Crichton initially refused but changed his mind after Spielberg himself got involved. The Lost World was published in 1995. Set 6 years after the events of Jurassic Park, the novel describes a rescue attempt at Site B, which is revealed to be an island where the production facilities for Jurassic Park's dinosaurs were actually located. The Lost World Jurassic Park was released to movie theaters in 1997. The film was a commercial success but received mixed reviews overall. The film bared little resemblance to either of the books and would be followed by Jurassic Park 3, which would be the first film not based on a Michael Crichton novel, although it actually featured more scenes from the Lost World than the actual film named The Lost World did. In fact, Jurassic Park 3 opened in 2001 and it was directed by Joe Johnston, marking the first time Steven Spielberg would not be associated or be in the director's chair for a Jurassic Park movie. This film again met with mixed reviews, but was still a commercial success. The movie saw Dr. Grant essentially tricked into going to Site B by a mother and father who were searching for their lost son. A year after the third film, rumors began to circulate that a fourth movie would be made. However, it's been only recently that Universal Pictures has confirmed that they are moving forward with the project. Also, no discussion of Jurassic Park would be complete without mentioning the iconic score done by John Williams. His score was featured in the first two films, and most notably included the main theme of Jurassic Park, which is seeped into pop culture everywhere and can be heard in the background here. The books and films have spawned quite a few video games, which have spanned multiple platforms and companies through a couple of decades now. The games have all been, well, mixed, to put it mildly. There have also been comic books, with the now-defunct company Topps Comics publishing Jurassic Park tie-ins from 1993 through to 1997. More recently, IDW began publishing comics as well, which have spanned 2010 to 2012. There have been multiple toy lines dedicated to the series, as well as Lego sets, which were released alongside the third movie. There are also rides in four of Universal Studios' theme parks, with a fifth scheduled to open soon. With the recent re-release of the first film into theaters in 3D and the announcement of a fourth film to be released June 13, 2014, the Jurassic Park franchise seems destined to live on despite the unfortunate death of author Michael Crichton. No matter what, it seems, something has survived.
Alrighty, and we're back. Thanks, Ryan. That was really good. Always good.
So, I gotta say, or actually, I guess I have to ask, as we often do with all of our topics, is we usually ask the question right off the top, is where do your memories with Jurassic Park begin? When did this movie come out in the theaters, Ryan?
What? Weren't you just listening? Oh, anyway. No, it was back in 1993 was the day it debuted in November 93. And for me personally, when you ask, Jurassic Park memories, there's never been a film that when I sit down and watch it, I remember what it was like as a kid, or in this case, as a teenager. I mean, I was 13 at the time. And I remember sitting down in the theater and watching the movie. And every single time, I rewatched it just for this. And every time I watch it, I just remember exactly what that was like. I was in love with the movie from the start. The original film was my first exposure to Jurassic Park as a franchise. I would go on and read the book not long after. And yeah, I mean, the movie is, every moment of it is etched on my memory. I remember picking up the VHS like as soon as it was out, and I watched it like probably enough to wear through some parts in the VCR or on the tape in the VCR. And I remember getting it on DVD and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I've grown up with this film in a lot of ways, and a lot of it's because when I was a kid, I loved dinosaurs, and I still remember all that stuff. I still love dinosaurs. I love Walking with Dinosaurs and all the documentaries and all that stuff still. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually remarkably the same way. I mean, when this movie came out in June of 93, I was in the fifth grade. I remember this specifically. I went to the theater. I saw this in theaters 10 times. That wow. year, and that's because it was cool, because I was only being in grade 5. I guess I was, what, maybe 11, I guess? Maybe?
And you hope to finish grade 5 someday soon.
Someday I'll be a real boy. and I remember just being so excited. I got some of the toys for this. But one of my weird memories that I associate with this, oddly enough, is food. Actually,
no comment.
Yeah, I know. Back when McDonald's used to do all these really cool tie-in things with all the really big pictures, they had the Jurassic Park theme meal, and they had, it was what's called the Jurassic double or triple cheeseburger, and that was amazing, first off. But the thing I remember most was the packaging. It looked like the Raptor pen from the movie, and you would unroll the bag and you could just, you know, you could look down into the like Raptor pen for it. I don't know whether they did this in the States. I'm guessing so. I think there were collector cups too, if I'm not mistaken. I think maybe Burger King.
Yeah, I remember the ads and everything for all that stuff too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like the marketing campaign for this shit was everywhere. And because this was 1993, unlike DVD where movies tend to come out 3 to 4 months afterwards, with VHS, you were waiting 6, 7, sometimes even longer for a movie to come out. And I remember this when I went into grade 6. My birthday's in October. I got the VHS.
Get your presents for Mike now.
Yes. And I got a copy of this on VHS. And I just remember that, just that plain black packaging with that iconic Jurassic Park logo sitting there. Threw it in the VCR. I got that and a hockey net and like $50 for my birthday. So not one of my better birthdays. Trust me, I got spoiled as a kid. And I just...
That explains a lot.
It really does. It really does. And I just remember having so many fun memories with the toys. My favorite one, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, was the Screaming Raptor, my favorite dinosaur. We'll talk about that. So I guess, Andrew, let's get to you, man.
Andrew vividly remembers being born 10 years after the movie came out. Oh, sorry.
Well, it was interesting because one of my fondest memories with Jurassic Park and where it kind of all began was more with the second movie, because my uncle had went away to Korea to teach for a few years, and he was just coming back as The Lost World was hitting VHS. And I hadn't seen my uncle for all these years, and I was like, we went out to rent a movie, and we picked out The Lost World. And looking back on it now, I mean, it's not it's not the best movie. It's not that good. But watching it when I was young, and I just have these fond memories with my uncle watching this movie, and we really kind of just connected over watching these shared love of dinosaurs just go crazy at each other. And it was constantly filled with me just constantly berating my uncle with all these random questions like, so what would you do in this situation? And him flabbergasted attempting to mangle up some type of answer to a kid asking him what he would do if a Tyrannosaurus attacked him. But other than that, I mean, a lot of the games, I played the games so much as a kid. It was a really big part of my childhood. And I remember fondly one Christmas, all of my toys I got for that year for Christmas were all the Jurassic Park toys. So I'll have a lot to talk about when it gets into there. But it's always been a film that's kind of influenced my love of cinema, and it really made me, for so long, I always wanted to become a paleontologist and pursue a career like that just because of this movie. So it's pretty influential.
Now, I have a question for you. Do you still have your Jurassic Park toys?
I wish I did. I'm one of those people who I don't think I don't really have any of my old toys left. I don't know what my parents did with them, but they're gone.
Don't worry, Mike would have just made you give them to him for his birthday in October.
It's true. I would have rolled a ridiculously high bluff check to try and make this happen. Excuse me. All right, so before we start talking about the films and the novels, etc., let's ask the other big dinosaur in the room, what's your favorite dinosaur that you've seen either on film or just in general? I know, Ryan, you've got a huge interest in dinosaurs. Let's start.
I was always a Stegosaurus guy. I was ecstatic to see them at the beginning of The Lost World. I was a little sad that they didn't show up at all in Jurassic Park. I remember in the theater sort of hoping to see one, but no, alas, they would wait until the sequel. But still, yeah, I was always the bigger Stegosaurus guy than anything else. I was always fascinated by the predators because, of course, we don't have modern predators like that, really, or definitely not the same size, obviously. So yeah, that's about it.
I'd say for me, I'm probably about the same thing. My Stegosaurus is one of my favorite creatures. There's another one that didn't make it on screen, and I wish I could remember its name off the top of my head. I know it existed during the Triassic period, which I think was like 150 million years ago or something like that. It was before the Jurassic period. It was a creature that had this huge fin on its back, and it was like a sun lizard or something.
Oh, that thing. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Dimetrodon is probably the one you're thinking of.
Yes. There's something about the way that creature looks I absolutely love. And this is going to be something really weird. I'm really fascinated with the trilobite. I just think that thing looks cool. I don't know. And I remember, this is so totally out of left field, there was an episode of Earthworm Jim, and for some reason, Jim asks Peter Puppy, what sound does a trilobite make? And I just remember a trilobite jumping up and down going doinky, 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 and that I fell in love with that creature that day. From the ones that came on screen, I really came interested in the Dilophosaurus. I mean, obviously we don't know whether it spit poison or had like a huge frill like it does in the movie. But I just thought it was a really cool name to say, and those head ridges, I think, just looked really, really kick-ass. So yeah, those are my favorites. Andrew?
I love the T-Rex, I love the Raptor, but an odd one that I've always kind of rotated toward would be the Pachycephalosaurus, which is the hard-headed dinosaur. And I just remember, like, I always had this toy as him as my kid, and he was always my favorite of all my toys, the Pachycephalosaurus, and I would just have him run through my sister's dollhouses and just destroy everything, so...
I gotta ask this right now, too. For anyone, any listeners out there, please email us at feedback@thisweekingeek. If you're listening to this like I am, sort of, and thinking, like, in the back of your head, like, I didn't have any of the Jurassic Park toys, but man, did I have a crap ton of Dino Riders from the 80s.
My God. You see, I thought some of those dinosaur toys looked better than some of the Jurassic Park ones.
Actually, a lot of people, and there's a lot of people screaming at their podcast right now, too, because they actually reused a lot of the Dino Riders dinosaurs in the Jurassic Park toy line. They took off, like, the armor and the guns and stuff you could attach to them or hook onto them or whatever, and just took that out, and they just sold the dinosaurs as Jurassic Park ones.
Man, actually, it's really cool. I was watching, there's a show on the Travel Channel called toy hunter, and I'll talk about this later, there's actually a really weird underground market for some of these toys, because some of them went unproduced. But anyway, so I guess let's kind of move on to our next discussion, and we're going to talk about the novels by Michael Crichton. Now, I have not had a chance to read these books in years, but I remember specifically reading the first Jurassic Park novel, and then, because I saw the movie first, and then I read the book. And I found the movie a lot more entertaining, but I did like parts of the book better. In the book, for example, I think Dr. Wu dies.
Yes.
I remember there...
Dr. Wu, not Doctor Who.
I remember there being a lot more dinosaurs. I remember Hammond dying.
Yes.
Which really made me kind of... Because in the book, he's a giant asswipe. Although in the movies, he's this kindly old man... old man, very much out of touch with reality, but not an evil man in and of himself. I also remember Donald Gennaro, the lawyer, being a lot more of a heroic character in the book.
Well, he's more useful.
Yeah. I mean, he still dies by the Rex, if I'm not mistaken.
No.
How does he die in the book?
He survives.
Oh, wow. I totally forgot that. Yeah.
The other huge change is Muldoon. Muldoon, A, survives, but B, is not useless. He gets a lot of the good lines Muldoon gets in the film are actually in the book as well, too. But in the book, he's a lot more useful, and he's actually able to fend off the raptors, and he sticks himself into a one-way pipe to get away from them and hides in there and shoots the leg off of another one. And
I remember that part.
Yeah, like he survives. There's a lot of changes. And I mentioned this in the pre-show that when people say the phrase, the book is better than the movie, my go-to is immediately Jurassic Park. And I like the movie a lot. I mentioned I have great memories of it when I was a kid. And I mean, I love that film, but the book is really good. To Mike's point that there's some stuff you thought was slower that was done better. A lot of that is probably because the book contains a lot more of the arguments between Ian Malcolm and Hammond about chaos theory and that sort of thing. And I find I really appreciate that an awful lot more now in my much later years. Than I did when I was much younger. And so, I mean, there's that. The big change that's always bugged me is Hammond dying in the book, which I actually liked. My issue there is that really the whole point of Jurassic Park, even the film, they make it clear that the point is not to mess with nature, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Hammond, in both the book and the film, has very little sort of respect for it. He creates the dinosaurs and just assumes he can control them. Now, yes, he's a little more douchebaggy about it in the book. And in fact, the conversation with Ellie from the movie is almost directly from the book, only it's Dr. Wu he talks to. And he doesn't go back on his idea that they need to continue the park or anything in the book. He doesn't see it as a mistake or anything. And so when he is killed, he ends up being eaten to death by the compies in a not particularly pleasant death, although he doesn't feel anything. But his death is immensely satisfying because you see both he and Dr. Wu as well pay the price for their hubris in assuming that they can control something as powerful as nature or as powerful as the dinosaurs. And it's sort of a science versus nature thing, and I've always found it immensely satisfying, and it's something that's kind of missing from the film, unfortunately.
One of the things I like better from the movie as opposed to the novel, I felt Dr. Grant was a more likable character in the movie. When I think of the character of Dr. Grant from the book in my mind, they describe him as a big bearded man, and honestly, yep. You're going to hate me for this one. You know who I picture Dr. Grant looking like now that I think about it?
Walter White.
Billy Mays.
Darn.
I honestly see Billy Mays as Dr. Grant.
Alan Grant here. Do you have tyrannosaur problems?
And it's just something about the way that he was portrayed by Sam Neill that brought this real likability to Grant.
Now, yeah. In terms of positive changes, too, I think you have to mention the kids. The kids in the books need to be punched in the head repeatedly and then thrown down into the basement and never spoken to again.
Yeah, because in the book, they're stupid.
Holy cow. Talk about a 180. Nowadays, it's the kids on screen that are annoying to us. But this was like one of the few books I read, and I thought, wow, the child actors and the children actually improved in the movie. That and, doesn't usually happen.
And they actually switch them up, where I think in the book, Tim is the old... Yeah, Tim's the older one, and Lex is the younger one. I like how they made the older... I like how they switched that up in the movie, that Lex is the older sister and is really intelligent and really, really useful.
Yeah, I think it's a smart move to make her the useful one, especially at that time. We look at, you know, the gender roles in film nowadays, and it's still not perfect, obviously, but it's a lot better than it was back then. And this was one of the movies you could almost sort of point to, as well as, I mean, let's be honest here, Muldoon is apparently inept and gets himself whacked by the first raptor he comes across, whereas, you know, Dr. Sattler was able to get away, and she, that was another example that, you know, she's a stronger character, probably. She was pretty strong in the book too, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the same one, same way, but I mean, in terms of women on screen, she was stronger than a lot of women were portrayed at the time.
I felt she was stronger in the novel as opposed to the movie. In the movie, she didn't have a lot to do, which is really unfortunate, because I really like Dr. Sattler. However, though, Laura Dern, when I picture her, that's who I picture. Like, there's just something about the... In the movie.
I now picture the honest trailers for Jurassic Park 3D, so...
That's another thing, too. This movie translated really well, I think, to 3D, surprisingly.
Yes.
I didn't feel like they... Was it necessary? No, but it wasn't unwelcome either.
I felt certain parts of the film, it added things to the foreground that was kind of annoying to me, because I guess since I've watched it so many times in 2D, things sticking out in the foreground when my eyes was trying to focus on another point in the film, it was kind of annoying at points, mm-hmm. but it wasn't terrible.
Another thing that I liked from the movie was a lot of the set and art design for it. And that's something I've only really come to appreciate since going to school and understanding film and everything. Rewatching these movies over the last couple of days, I realized just how much care went into things. Specifically, when you look at some of the movies' sets when it comes to the laboratories, you can see different things on different monitors, and they all make sense. I mean, if you kind of know what they're actually kind of talking about. When they're in the laboratory and Nedry's stealing the embryos to put in the canister, all those names exist, and some of those are references to the book. I think some of those were newly discovered species at the time. Stuff like that. And, I don't know, there were a lot of little funny nods to things in it, too. Plus, just, I don't know, there are very few movie fonts that really stand out. Jurassic Park and Star Trek and Star Wars are the ones that jump to mind immediately.
We've moved a bit away from, like, the novel, and, I mean, we'll get back to it when we talk about The Lost World. But two things that have to be brought up when you talk about Jurassic Park as a film.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, go read the books if anyone out there hasn't and they get the chance to. They're fantastic, terrific reads. But anyway, the two things that have to be brought up when you mention Jurassic Park. Number one, and I mentioned it in the Just the Facts, John Williams. The Jurassic Park theme and the overall score to the movie, and he did 1 and 2, was amazing. I mean, that theme, I can hear a couple notes from it, and I know exactly what it is. I mean, it's one of his most iconic ones.
Definitely.
And that's saying something for somebody with John, you know, Williams' pedigree and everything he's done. The second big thing is the use of CGI. Man, George Lucas could learn a lesson from this movie. I mean, it was used reasonably sparingly, but every time it did, it didn't seem jarring. And even that's by today's standards. I mean, it was really well done special effects. And even Spielberg, to a certain extent, has never replicated that mixture of live action and special effects and making it seem so seamless.
It's one of those movies that I think actually has a bit of a timeless quality to it. Outside of the stuff that involves computers heavily,
Yeah, there's that, but still.
But yeah, it's just, it's one of those movies that really seems kind of timeless. And it's weird, when I was playing the Jurassic Park game, the one from Telltale from 2 years ago, it seems like they've updated it to happen now.
Yeah,
and it's really kind of weird, because I just didn't even think about it. Like, Jurassic Park is a movie I hope they never remake, just because it sits in this weird era in film, I think, where if you don't think about it, you'll never notice what year that it happens in.
Well, to be fair, the other thing that kind of dates it are some of the mistakes with regards to the dinosaurs and things we thought we knew. But I think that that's something that's going to continue to shift. I mean, we continue to discover new things every few years, as well as new species and everything else. So that's going to be something that's, you know, difficult to keep updated. But yeah, I mean, I agree completely. And even though this takes me back to the theater, way too many years ago. That's depressing. Anyway, 20 years ago, it's still, the film itself has a timeless quality, I would agree. It looks like something that could have been made pretty much any time now, with the exception of, you know, some of the obvious stuff, computers, some of the clothes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, there's just something about, another thing to really kind of mention about, because, I mean, you know what, I'm going to save that for later. I want to talk about The Lost World to advance our conversation here. I really like some of the ideas it put into, and it almost seemed like the humans were better prepared for this one. I remember them talking about the dart gun. They use the gun in the book. They never use it in the movie, and they talk about how you're dead before you realize you've been pricked by the dart.
The movie bears no resemblance to the book. Don't base any of it off of that. The book is infinitely better, regardless of what anyone sort of thinks of the movie. I think we'll have some varying viewpoints there. But yeah, there's no resemblance or comparison. There's no point in even sort of discussing, you know, the differences between one and the other. So, yeah.
However, though, that being said, I don't remember much of the Lost World novel when I compare it to Jurassic Park. Now, admittedly, I've only read Lost World maybe 2-3 times, whereas
I read it yesterday.
Oh, again. Wow.
Whereas I've read Jurassic Park, like I said, at least 5 or 6 times, at least.
And Jurassic Park's the much better novel, and it's the much more memorable one. The discussions sort of pop off the page. There are more characters, and they're developed a lot better. And that's really the big difference here. Again, you know, if you get the chance, read the book.
Now, wasn't The Lost World, like, the book made because they needed a sequel for the movie? Because Because didn't, like, the main character of the Lost World book originally die in the first Ian Malcolm Jurassic Park movie?
Yeah, Ian Malcolm dies in Jurassic Park. But it's okay, he was misdiagnosed and he was alright. That's basically, they just sort of, like, skip over it, which was probably the right thing to do. But yeah, they decided to continue on the series. It was Steven Spielberg's urging to Crichton, not to mention Universal really wanted a sequel, but it was Spielberg urging Michael Crichton to write a sequel, because he had never written a sequel to any of his books, even the ones that had open endings and everything. He just never wanted to, and this was the first, and I could be wrong, but I believe it's the only time he ever wrote a sequel for any of his work as well, too.
That's interesting. I mean,
yeah, still a solid book, but nowhere near the original.
So how does it end in comparison to the Lost World movie? Because one of the most memorable parts of the movie is that ending. Is that in the book at all? Or how does the no?
Oh God, no.
Again, no resemblance at all between the two. The basic plot is the same. There's sort of a rescue hatched to, although it's completely different characters in the book, there's a rescue operation hatched towards Site B. That's the only real resemblance. There's one sequence from the book that makes it into the film. Oddly enough, more sequences from the Lost World novel would make it into Jurassic Park 3, as well as some of the missing scenes from the original Jurassic Park novel make it into the third movie.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
But yeah, there is no, like, running around in San Diego, which maybe it was the 4 years in difference between 93 and then, you know, the the film adaption for Lost World was 97. Maybe it was the fact I had read the books in that span of time. I don't know. But when I sat down for the Lost World, it was not even close to as enjoyable. It didn't help that I wanted to punch the kids in the head. using gymnastics to beat up a velociraptor is one of the scenes that
oh god
shaped me as a child and made me want to throw things at a screen on occasion, because that was awful.
That's another thing, too. I found the characters in the book, obviously, were a lot more enjoyable. The characters I found on screen for Lost World annoyed me more than I thought. However, I did really like Julianne Moore as Sarah Harding. And
she's good. And that was a good choice. And what's weird is even Ian seems a little bit off in the Lost World film adaption.
I one of the people I liked Pete Postlethwaite in the film adaptation. I thought he was a cool type of character that was almost like Muldoon, but he actually did stuff.
Yeah, and Muldoon should have done stuff, damn it. They should have used the version of him from the book. Curses. I think the other thing to bring up, too, with The Lost World and some of its problems were the poor editing. You can go on pretty much anywhere, and you can read some interesting facts about the production of the film and basically where it went wrong. The best example of this, and the one that everybody remembers, is remember the boat crashing into the harbor that has the T-Rex on it in San Diego?
Yeah.
Oh, spoilers for a movie many years old. Anyway. And so the boat crashes in, and they find out everyone is on the boat is dead. How the hell did the T-Rex kill everyone on the boat?
With a machine gun.
I mean, the T-Rex is locked in the basement, but everyone on top is dead. And, of course, there's a scene missing that had, like, the raptors up there. Part of the issue was they couldn't figure out what to do with the raptors afterwards as well. So, unfortunately, due to poor editing, everybody on the boat ends up dead, and we have absolutely no clue why, and it doesn't make any sense. So,
that is pretty weird. Although, the bus scene where the two T-Rexes are attacking, like, the Jeep and the bus scene is pretty well edited, so,
only
like...
Only scene from the book.
Oh, is it? Okay, because yeah. I was about to say, that's probably the most memorable and most well-done scene in the movie.
And you kind of see why that you may want to at least use some of the elements of your source material.
Yeah.
They made some odd choices with it.
There was a really awesome deleted scene that was left. Actually, there were two deleted scenes that are on the Blu-rays for Lost World that I wish I'd made it into the film. One of them involves Pete Postlethwaite's character, Roland. He's sitting in South Africa having a beer with his buddy, and his buddy walks up and says, "Hey, I got this really cool job. You should come check it out." And he's like, "What could I possibly do? I've killed tigers, lions, all..." You know, he basically rattles off, "I've done everything. I've got nothing left." And he's like, "You're probably going to want to hear this one." And then he sees these group of, like, basically these, like, frat boys harassing a woman at a bar. And he walks over and goes, "You, sir, are not a gentleman." This guy's like, "Is that supposed to be some kind of an insult?" He's like, "Yes, the highest kind." And the guy's like, "Yeah, well, I'm going to kick your ass." "Okay." And he's like, "I can do it with one hand behind my back." And he's like, "Yeah, all right." So Buddy stands up, and Pete Postlethwaite's character, Roland, puts his hand behind his back. He's like, "Old man, I said I'm going to put my hand behind my back." So they get ready, and Roland just wails this guy in the face once. Knocks him pretty much out. He's bleeding all over the place. His buddies pick him up, and he's like, "Don't come back here again," or something like that. So he goes, sits back down, takes his drink as if nothing has even happened. And it makes him a lot more sympathetic character than without that part in the movie. Because in the movie, you might feel kind of bad for him not, you know, looking after his men or being better looked after or whatever. Another scene that's cut out was Hammond's son, Peter Ludlow. He's in there giving a speech to the board of directors, and he's like, "Robert Muldoon's family, $23 million. John Arnold's family, $56 million. And he goes through all these settlement suits, and evidently for them to destroy the island, it cost $193 million. And he rattles off all these numbers. He's like, "We're bleeding money because of John Hammond. We have to get him out." And I don't know, I kind of wish that had made it in, because it paints John Hammond as completely incompetent and shows just how much InGen has gone down the shitter since the incident at the park.
Again, that was kind of something that, you know, the books do a little bit more of. And the other thing you touched on that I feel like was lost between the books and the films was the actual destruction of the island, which is described in the books as well, too. I kind of wish we had seen that.
Yeah, because I think they get...
There's something fitting about ending it, with, you know, fire. With that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have, like... I think the Costa Rican military, like, napalms the shit out of the island.
Yes.
Although some survive because they hide on the beaches.
And well, they had already made it to the beaches at this point. There were reports. That's what sort of leads the... leads Hammond and crew to get people to the island to try to sign off on it. It's pressure because it's suspected that these animals have already made it off of the island.
And I think
they have.
Yeah, at the end of the first book, they found like a compy body on the mainland. But even in the beginning of the Jurassic Park book, they suspect. They think it's a mutated iguana, but it's actually a compy that bit some baby's face or something.
Yeah, the compy's found at the start of the book. By the end, Grant actually never really makes it out of Costa Rica. Grant is essentially stuck there because they have reports of dinosaurs pretty much all over the place, including what sounds like a Diplodocus or maybe even a Patasaurus or something like that, wandering through the Costa Rican jungles on the mainland, as well as they had reports of like raptor attacks and that kind of thing. So by the end of the first book, they're pretty much running all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of things that worked in the books, but I don't know necessarily if it would have translated on screen, because I remember at one point, this was probably in the late 90s, I remember people talking about turning Jurassic Park into a cartoon series.
That's weird.
Yeah, and they were going to be hunting the dinosaurs in different cities.
It's not all that weird. Everything was a cartoon series in the 90s. Bucky O'Hare got a cartoon.
But I think they wanted to call it Dino Squad or something like that. I remember this vaguely, and I think it was in the early days of IGN.
Before. There was a Dino Squad TV show. I don't think it had anything to do with Jurassic Park, though.
No, I remember. I know it never made it past pitch, but I thought that might have been kind of a neat idea. So I guess let's more concentrate on the movies right now. My favorite one out of the three, I think it's probably going to be universal here, is the first one. Mostly for me, it's because of sound. And it's weird. Since going to school at Niagara College and being a radio guy, obviously I've taken an interest in sound. I've been in sound for 6 years with Twig. And it's only in the last year that I've really sat down and listened to movies. And playing this movie the other night through my 5.1 surround setup, hearing the Rex just boom, boom, hearing my subwoofer kick, hearing the raptor screech, hearing the Dilophosaurus just roar to fill the room. It's goddamn beautiful. Honestly, I'm not sure if they have this on the Blu-ray. I kind of want to go back and see if they have the movie presented without dialogue, and it's just sound and effects only. Because some of the sound design that I found out while going through some of the special features is they went through retarded depths to get certain sounds. When they're outside the explorers before they get attacked by the Rex, it's raining, and you can hear specifically the sound of the rain hitting Grant's hat. They went out specifically to get that sound. They found sound on different types of soil, different types of material, and that's all called Foley sound. But I just couldn't believe how much detail they went into it. And then how they recreated the effect of the impact tremor, it's a guitar string being plucked near a glass of water. That's what generates that specific, that little visual cue. So that's why I like it, because the sound, obviously the score, John Williams, total verbal blowjob. That man is a goddamn treasure to mankind. It will be a sad day when he passes away.
Yeah, I mean, first movie for me, too, for pretty much all the reasons we've talked about. A distant second place to the third movie, actually, which we haven't really talked about. Despite the fact that Taya Leone's character is immensely annoying, Amanda Kirby, it had half of the children, or half the annoying children of the other movies, so that was helpful. No Vince Vaughn, which is a severe major plus to the third film. But I mean, more than that, some cool sequences. The sequence underwater slash with the raft slash boat was neat. And I'm trying to remember some of the other ones.
The aviary.
Yeah, the bird cool. thing was cool.
Yeah, the aviary was nice. That was the other one. I just couldn't remember the name of it for some reason. That was a neat sequence, and one that I always wondered, you know, why didn't we get to see any pterodactyls or anything? Well, we did, finally. So, I mean, there were some good scenes to it. Overall, it still wasn't a great film, and they were never able to equal the original.
Yeah, for me, I'm obviously going to say the original, too. But part of my love for the original comes from some of, like, the visual stuff, to kind of piggyback off of Dodd's love of the audio. It's just some of the little visual cues they put in this movie is just astounding. Like, I love when the T-Rex looks into the car and they shine the light and the pupils of the T-Rex dilate. And it's just, like, little things like that just sell the movie that much more. And I was watching it like for a few times ago, and I'd seen the movie millions of times, and then the significance of the last shot finally hit me with Grant looking at the bird as it flies away, and the line comes up like when you think I was thinking of the line, it's like, you'll never look at birds the same way again, and you just see the bird like flapping its wings, and it's like, wow, that is like an amazing way to end the movie, and it just ties the whole thing together from the start, and it's just such a perfect way to end it. And again, like all the set design in the films and everything like that just sells it completely. The kitchen. I love the restaurant they eat at with all of the lush the dinosaurs drawn in the background while they're eating the buffet, the jiggling jello. It's just everything about the visual cues of the film just works so perfectly, and that's probably why I love the first one the best.
Nearly every scene is memorable. I mean, this first time you see a dinosaur, which is Grant and Sattler's reactions when they first see the Brachiosaurus.
Yeah, that head turn is just amazing.
Yeah, and just scene after scene that I think anyone who's seen this movie immediately remembers as soon as they think about it. And that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that I just kind of found out why I love the first movie, and this happens right near, like, in the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie. Do you remember the speech he gives to that little kid?
Yeah.
That is one of the coolest things I've ever seen on screen, because I think that kid was legitimately fucking terrified when Grant just tells him, you're still alive when they begin to eat you.
But was that kid a boy or a girl? That's what I need to know, thanks
no
to
one
Riff
will
Drax
ever
and,
know.
And Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. I mean, I remember the parody for this, Jurassic Park.
Is right out in the dark.
All the dinosaurs are running wild. We could almost go back and forth. I think we did this on Twitter like last week, actually.
It's funny, too, because Weird Al does the Riff Trax with Mike Nelson on their site, and it's really well done. Like, you can tell that Jurassic Park is actually still a good movie. It's one of those that they make fun of the situations, but they don't necessarily make fun of the film because the quality is actually there.
Trying to think, what else can we really say about the movies that we really kind of have? Okay, what's the one everybody hates?
Two.
Oh, yeah, two.
I can't say I hate any of them. I don't love two, but there are parts of two that I still enjoy. I can watch them and not be repulsed.
I found two. I watched this night before last with my wife Blair, and the more I think about the character of Malcolm's kid Kelly, the more he annoys the ever-living shit out of me, because she's just got this irritating voice, and I feel like kind of an asshole for saying that, but I don't like the... Blair said this to me, so these are her words, not mine. the kid looks a little too dark to be his.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I don't know, there's just, I don't know whether it needed to have the race card played. I mean, obviously we don't want this movie to be whitewashed, but it felt just a little too forced into me. I don't know, is that just me? Is that racist to say?
Well, it's interesting because he talks about having so many ex-wives, so I'm not sure if he has any other children or if this is his only child, and I don't know. I get what you're saying about the whole, she's not the same race, and if it was like a mixed-race family, wouldn't she be a little lighter?
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not pointing that out to be racist or anything. I'm pointing that out because it's too jarring.
Yeah. Where is the birth certificate? I mean, that's what I want to know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it would have been nicer if... I'm glad it was a girl. I guess they were trying to build upon the success they had with the Lex character in the first movie. Now, on a side note, Andrew has posted in our chat room... This guy, wow. The kid from the first Jurassic Park movie who gets scared by the raptor looks like an evil, fat version of the G-Man from Half-Life.
It's Hertford, for anyone out there wondering.
He's probably listening to it right now thinking, curses, they discovered my secret identity. Yeah.
Or you're about to face a lawsuit. I'd like to point out I didn't say anything bad. I'm a good person. Sometimes. Yeah, I mean, the second movie deserves a lot of the issues it's been given. I mean, let's be honest, the whole sequence at the end, the San Diego...
It's fun, but it's not Jurassic Park.
No, and it's kind of dumb. I mean, we never really see, like, the police or army or really anyone try to do anything. We get kind of the dopey sequence with the dog. I kept hoping it would eat more people, at least.
Yeah, it would have been awesome had the Rex, like, crash its face through that, like, family's living room and just ate the family.
Yeah, that would have been pretty awesome. Isn't it, like, when they go into the movie store, isn't there the Sylvester Stallone as the Terminator thing in it?
You're thinking Last Action Hero, I think.
Oh, am I?
But
I thought there was something.
There are different movie posters in there. Because I've got the Blu-ray, I actually might go back and see if I can pan in and scan. Because there's a Robin Williams movie on the wall that doesn't exist. I know that for sure. One little bit of trivia. Do you remember when the Rex is running through San Diego and it eats that one guy who runs towards the camera and crashes into the door?
Yeah.
That's the screenwriter. That's David Kopp.
Well, someone had to kill him.
Exactly.
Ouch.
But, yeah, there's just... I don't know. There are parts of Jurassic Park 2 I like. There are parts I fucking hate. But if you want to see a really good review and riff on it, go check out the Nostalgia Critics review of it. It's pretty funny. Continuing on, let's move on. We're going to let's talk about the video games for this franchise.
Oh dear.
Now,
there
are some good ones. Let me get that out of the way. There are some good ones. I just finished the Jurassic Park Telltale game last night. Otherwise known as QuickTime the game. it's not bad. I'm glad I paid. I think I paid 10 bucks for it. I think it's $5 now. Totally worth $5. But not 20. In fact, I pre-ordered the collector's edition when it got delayed for like 8 months. I'm like, fuck it. I got a free game. I got Sam and Max out of the deal, I think.
I gotta say, I think the Jurassic Park game was one of the main reasons that when Telltale acquired the Walking Dead license, people were worried because it's just not a good way to do an action game. QuickTime events are something that can increase the player's feeling of power or being that character within the game when used properly within cutscenes, but it's not something you can base entire gameplay around. And that's the main portion where the game falters. I mean, it's got questionable puzzle-solving elements as well, too, and it doesn't have a lot of memorable characters. But really, I mean, the crux of it for me was just it just didn't have the gameplay. And Walking Dead suffers from a lot of the same issues, but the big difference there was the writing. You cared about Clementine, and you cared about the main character whose name escapes me, so apparently I didn't care about him that much. Oh,
Lee.
Boy.
His name is Lee.
Yes. Jeez, what the heck is wrong with me tonight? Anyway, yeah, you care about Lee and Clem, and like the Jurassic Park game. It hasn't been that long since I played it. I can't remember the name of a single freaking character. Although I can't remember Lee's name either, so I guess that's not saying much, is it?
The character that I liked in the Jurassic Park game, I liked Jerry Harding, and they explained him a better in the Jurassic Park book, the first one. I'm glad they expanded upon his character here. In the game, though, there were a lot of really nice references to the fact that Sarah was his daughter from a different marriage, which I was kind of wondering about that. Like, I thought he only had one daughter, but okay, whatever. Why the raptors are so big in Jurassic Park, because they're mutants, because when they cloned them because of the frog DNA, it made certain elements of their genetic sequence unstable.
Because Michael Bay was rewriting it, and they were originally aliens from another planet, but he decided to make them mutants again because fans were angry.
I don't know, I kind of liked how the game tried to fill in some questions. I did like how the game's secondary antagonist, by the way, spoilers, I guess you haven't played this in 2 years, fuck you. It was a woman named Dr. Laura Sorkin, and she's the chief geneticist who said to John Hammond, "We can fix the problems we've got. Just give me a little bit more time." Whereas Henry Wu came in, like, "Hey, frog DNA, I can have your park up and running in 6 months." So sort of thing. So I was glad that they mentioned that the raptors are different. They have more in common with Utah raptor and Deinonychus than they do velociraptors. Because velociraptors are like 3 feet tall. They're pretty small.
And have feathers.
Another one is they talked about the Dilophosaurs, how they explain it, like, because there's journals you can find in the game, or they just unlock as you go through, I guess. And they're like, "Oh, hey, by the way, this was unexpected." Or they just fill in little gaps like that. Plus the fact they had another one of my favorite dinosaurs, the duck-billed dinosaur, the parasaur, which is...
Oh, cool.
Never gets any respect. Love that. They also tell you the fate of the soda can, or not the soda can, the shaving cream can. Either way, it gets lost on the island. Either the T-Rex steps on it, or it gets swallowed by the Rex in the game. So, Biosyn is not getting it. But it's still a worthwhile game. The other game that I really enjoy in the Jurassic Park hierarchy of games was the one for the Sega CD. But fuck is it hard. Just because you need a walkthrough to beat that game. Me and Scott Bordas sat down. We beat the game over the course of, I think, like 4 hours 2 summers ago. And it was just so bloody hard. But it was so rewarding once you beat that game. Just because it was that hard. You really, literally felt that sense of accomplishment beating it. And lastly, another good game was the original one for the Sega Genesis.
Well, and then it's much harder sequel, Rampage Edition.
But more fun, though, because you got more guns and stuff.
Yeah. That was one where you could play as a raptor, right?
Yes.
Although
age has not necessarily been kind to those. I mean, some of the jumping is a little awkward and the controls are a little loose. But overall, yeah, they were two of the better games. Some of the bad ones, I mean, Ocean did the NES and Super Nintendo games, which were top-down...
They weren't
shooters
bad.
Slash gather the egg hunts, which were mediocre.
See, actually, I've got a quick story about that one. The one for the Super Nintendo, I love because of the music. And it also samples voice. You just have someone going, "Grant," every time you walk up to a fucking telephone pole.
But it also had the first-person sequences and was one of the first console games to try that.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's
cool.
Annoying because it's really easy to get lost.
Yep. There's no map or anything, really.
Yeah, so you better hope you find what you're looking for.
Yeah, so I mean, there were those. They weren't particularly good. The 3DO one, if I remember correctly, was absolutely awful. My personal all-time favorite, of course, the excellent Jurassic Park Trespasser for the PC, known as one of the buggiest and worst games of all time, until it was eventually patched and made a whole lot better, but is still completely awful. So there's that. My favorite of the Jurassic Park games actually dates back to a fairly recent trip to the Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas, you ever get the chance, go to it, by the way. It's pretty cool. See the history of gaming and everything. The Jurassic Park pinball games were awesome. There's actually sequences where you can set, you know, knock the ball in and the T-Rex will come down and try to eat it.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it mixed sound clips. It mixed video clips. It was really cool. And just, if like I say, if you get the chance, go play it. It's a really fun experience. It was one of the... It's one of the first I can remember that merged everything really well. Sound, video, and the lights and everything. So, yeah, that was my favorite. The arcade games, Andrew, you'll get on this, I'm sure, were really good, too. Like, the arcade shooters.
Oh, yeah.
Although, let's be honest, they were meant to suck up your quarters, just like every arcade game back then.
Yeah, they were pretty awesome. Again, like, this is the same uncle. Him and his wife, like, I watched beat the entirety of the Lost World arcade game, and it was pretty an awesome moment as to be that my uncle do that. I was like, yes, do it, because I would always die. I would make it like two levels in, and then I couldn't do it anymore.
But and they, it only cost them the price of a 3DO.
Yeah, basically. Another one of my favorite games is like one that not many people have played. It was Jurassic Park Operation Genesis. Have either of you guys played this one?
I have, and if you can find this game, it's surprisingly rare.
Is that the
PS2 one?
Oh, I had it for a PC, but it's on PS2. It's like
Xbox as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had it, and it was like kind of like a Zoo Tycoon type game where you get to create your own like Jurassic Park basically. And I would always create an awesome park, and then I would delete all the exits and release them all on the innocent people and watch them eat them for like half an hour.
Wow, you sick fuck.
There was also the theme park as well game, which I can't remember the name of. I think it was just like theme park.
Yeah,
something like that. I remember I always wished that Bullfrog would get the chance to do it, because they were kind of the kings of, they made my favorite like theme parks. Actually, they made the actual theme park game as well as Theme Hospital. I always wished they had gotten the chance to do it. But that game was all right too.
I actually played a board game for Jurassic Park that I really liked. There was a Jurassic Park 3 board game called like the Island Survival Game, and I don't remember much of the rules as much, but I remember you got to play as dinosaurs and you basically hunt the other players down across the board, and it was actually like a really fun game. So it's a board game. If you can find it, it's pretty fun.
I just wanted to finish the thing that I did with the Super Nintendo game. I kind of lost track. I remember playing this, and like Ryan described, it's basically find eggs and take them back to the house and whatever, right? It's a pretty simple game, but fun. I decided in my infinite wisdom to play this game during a thunderstorm.
Ooh.
Guess what happened just as I was reaching the final egg? Power goes out.
Ooh.
I can think of three times in my life where I've screamed in rage. My parents bust in my room. I'm like, what's wrong? What's wrong? Get out! And I was just so mad at my Super Nintendo for choosing that moment to go out on me in the storm. I think it was God telling me to go to bed.
It's funny you mention that, because in the last week, probably about a week ago, I started like rewatching all the movies. I reread each of the books. I finished The Lost World yesterday, rereading it for about the billionth time as well. But anyway, over the last week now, I've been awakened at night by like numerous nightmares thanks to rereading and rewatching this stuff. A couple nights ago, I got hit by lightning in my dream, so I woke up like yelling and convulsing.
Oh my gosh. Jesus.
And then, yeah, that was fun. And then last night, I woke up screaming because I was being chased by raptors. And so, thanks a lot, Mike. Can we pick something a little quieter for our next theme next month?
I think you're going to like what I got in store for next month. So, let's get into our final kind of talking bit here, the toys for Jurassic Park. I had quite a few of the figures for this, and these guys are made by Kenner, which I don't think they're around anymore. They were an Ohio-based toy company. They also did a lot of the like early Star Wars stuff, too. And I had all the figures. I think I had the Jeep, but not the Explorer for this. I had the Pterodactyl, I had the Raptor, the Dilophosaur, but the electronic screaming versions. And I think that was about it. I always wanted the Visitor Center playset, which I found recently for $200 in a guy over in Barrie. That's a, probably about 45 minutes from my house, for those of you that want to know.
You bought two of them.
I wish. I want the Jurassic Park Explorer, just that green Ford Explorer. Goes for ridiculous prices on eBay. As a kid, that's the only vehicle I wanted from that set. And I didn't realize how long the Jurassic Park sets went on. I mean, they were still making Jurassic Park toys, I think, until 2002. Like, it went ridiculously long. I mean, there was stuff for, obviously, Jurassic Park, The Lost World. There was Alan Grant and his Dino Squad, or whatever the hell they called those toys. They also had... Okay. When you picture a figure of Dennis Nedry, you should picture Wayne Knight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope.
They gave you this action hero build guy with dark sunglasses.
What?
Yeah, nobody signed their likenesses over for these figures. And they're just... the figures' faces look goofy. I mean, look at Tim in particular. Some of the toys are terrible looking, but the dinosaurs are amazing looking. One, I know... I think Mike Laidman wants this, or has, I think he still has his T-Rex with dino damage.
Oh, nice. I always had the bull T-Rex that had this stomach that could split open, and you could take like this cage out that had this guy in this cage, and like you could, and he could, like, the T-Rex toy could like swallow the guy in the cage, and then he could take it out of his stomach. It was a pretty awesome toy.
Ryan, did you?
I didn't have any of the toys. I don't know. I had Dino Riders in the 80s. That was pretty bitchin', right? In my defense, in the time between Jurassic Park 1 and Jurassic Park 2, I was busy changing a lot of things. I mean, my musical tastes went from owning the sign on CD to the Downward Spiral. So, I mean, that's got to count for something, right?
You know what? It's actually kind of funny you mentioned that, because I read something about this. The 90s were an interesting period of change when you look at music and even toys, because it just seems like there was this radical shift from toys that did really cool things, like Transformers. I think a lot of Transformers in the 90s sucked, with the exception of Beast Wars. And it just seems like Kenner, the action figures that we got for Jurassic Park, were less gimmick-based, but, I mean, because a lot of the dinosaurs were really detailed, really, 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 really cool ones, and there were actually were a number of them that were never produced. There's a show I was watching on the Travel Channel called Toy Hunters, and there's one episode in the first season where the guy goes to a guy's house. He lives in Akron, Ohio, where Kenner is, I think. And he finds a bunch of Jurassic Park prototypes. He then sells four white dinosaurs, because that's what the prototypes are typically made out of, like mismatched colors, or here's the texture of how it would feel parts, right? $4,000. And there's this huge market for these things when they turn up. And although I don't recall a lot of the later toys for Jurassic Park 3 when it came out, because I was well finishing high school, I was done high school when Jurassic Park 3 came out. I mean, obviously, I'm still a big toy guy, but that's about the time that I fell out of it. Trying to think, is there any other memorable toy things that we could potentially think of, or maybe other kind of merchandise?
They did Lego sets, but they seem to be remarkably rare. It's difficult to actually, like, even find pictures of the blasted things. That was just from Jurassic Park 3. So if anyone has those, you should probably hold on to them.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. I never knew they had Legos for this. I remember, I'm trying to think if I remember anything weird specifically for toys or other merchandise. I remember clothes being really cool. I remember, yeah. I had a Jurassic Park polo shirt, and I was so proud to wear that. I'm like, I'm Jurassic Park staff.
I'm Jurassic Park. No. I don't know why that's funny, but...
because I'm as huge as a dinosaur. But I don't know. There was just a lot of really cool things that that movie gave us. Obviously, some really cool video games, some fucking terrible. We had trading cards. Jurassic Park was the first soundtrack I ever bought. The second one was Independence Day. great scores, by the way. I'm trying to think of what else it really gave us. I mean, it gave us this huge culturally impacting movie. I mean, you think of the 90s, you think of Jurassic Park. And like Ryan said, not too long off the top of the hour, you can hear just a few notes of Jurassic Park and you know what that is.
This was the first film in my lifetime to break the box office too and become the highest film grossing film of all time in my lifetime, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean,
now it happens every few weeks when somebody releases a new superhero film, but at the time it was a big deal.
Yeah, and this is before we had the eras of the Titanic and everything. This was, I don't know, it was a different kind of blockbuster. It almost seems to come from a more genuine era of big movies. I think this was when Spielberg did his best work, was in the 90s with like this, Saving Private Ryan.
It has a heart that blockbusters today, a lot of them seem to lack.
Yeah, and that's
not all, but quite a few. And there's a depth to it. I know the science doesn't hold up when you examine it really hard, but it was there. It felt deeper than it was. And that's, there's a lot of movies, you know, look at something like Battleship and tell me that that's still around today.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad how our blockbusters cater to what's in the moment. I'm glad superhero movies are out there because there's going to be some really cool ones this year. But at the same time, it's
Jurassic Park 4 next year, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that one. I've heard troubling things.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been in development hell forever. In theory, they've hopefully taken out this ideas of like the human dinosaurs or raptors with lasers or some of the other brilliant plans we've heard about over the years.
I doubt it.
Well, all right. There's a final question before we finish the show. What do you want to see in Jurassic 4?
A good movie. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. Actually, I don't really know. It might be interesting to see the updated dinosaurs. I just want to see them update the dinosaurs to the point where they actually look like to what we would know now, if you know what I understand. Like, if they would update it for, like, the modern dinosaur and the modern era. And, I don't know, maybe try. I don't know what they could do with the park aspect that they haven't done, but as far as dinosaurs go, I'd like to see, like, upgraded models, probably.
Well, that's maybe the question, too, in order to kind of add some depth to it, is as much as I don't want just a straightforward retelling, or, sorry, reboot of Jurassic Park, maybe a retelling is potentially possible. You get, you know, somebody else, excuse me, has discovered the technology or something remained from the other islands, and somebody else tries it over again. Excuse me, jeez.
In
thanks,
space.
Voice, really helping me out here. Anyway, so I mean, I don't want a straightforward reboot or anything like that, but maybe some type of retelling if they want to keep it in the theme park sort of aspect. The other option is to set it on some small island and just say, like, oh, the dinosaurs got out or something like that. Or maybe it's an Island of Dr. Moreau sort of situation. Or I think no matter what, you're going to stretch believability at some point. And I think you sort of temper that with some element of science. Try to explain why they bring them back again. And then the other thing too is I think they need to restore the sort of theme of man versus nature and the idea of control again, because that's really what gave the first film a lot of its heart, and they never tried that again. There was never another element of control or anything like that. It was just sort of they go to an island and get chased by dinosaurs.
One thing that I definitely want to see in Jurassic 4,
Grimlock. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I want to see something deadlier than the raptors.
The Punisher. Oh, yes. Sorry.
Yeah, I want raptors with guns attached to them.
That was one of the... Remember, that's one of the treatments.
I don't know. I remember at one point, the guy from Bones and Angel was attached to star in it. David Boreanaz or whatever. I wouldn't mind seeing him in this. I'd be okay with that. I kind of hope they don't bring back old characters like Malcolm or Grant. Although, I might be okay if they brought back Sattler. I think, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a female-led Jurassic Park.
That would be kind of cool.
Maybe bring back Lex in some capacity. I don't know. Just kind of spitballing.
What if Grant or Malcolm were sort of consultants at some point, just briefly, just a bit of a nod? I think that might be okay. But yeah, I wouldn't want to see it star them. Or there'd be no reason for them to want to go back to another island again with dinosaurs on it. That would be kind of dumb.
Yeah, they'd be like, fuck that. I'm not.
We've tempted fate twice. Let's do it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No.
Are there any dinosaurs that you really want to see them put on screen?
Oh, man, I'm thinking here. I want to see a water-based... Give me a plesiosaur.
Yeah, that would be cool.
A water-based dinosaur. That would be so cool. Or like, oh, I know what I want, but it's not possible with the current technology they're using in the movie. A megalodon. The giant prehistoric fucking shark.
Yeah, that would be neat. Oh. I was worried you were going to say... one of the other ideas they had, which was a raptor-human hybrid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you should read some of the scripts that are floating around for Jurassic Park 4. Actually, maybe you shouldn't.
I forget. Was there an ankylosaurus on the screen yet? Like, was that in number 3?
Yes, when they're going down the river, you see.
Oh, that's right, that's right. I'd like to see one of those guys in action, though. That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. So I think we've hit the logical stopping point, my friends. Because we all just had that moment of silence where we're like, I think we're done.
To be fair, I could talk about dinosaurs for like days, and maybe this is something we revisit in a science podcast or something else.
You know what?
As much as I love Jurassic Park and everything, the science is a bit wonky on it, but still, like, it's solid enough.
Yeah, you know what? I really like that idea. So maybe we'll revisit this topic later in the year. We'll try and get someone from Dinosaur Park here in Canada. We have a Dinosaur Natural Preserve out in Alberta. Or maybe we'll try and get an actual paleontologist.
In other words, someone smarter than all of us.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, guys, thank you for tuning into this. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk about Jurassic Park. Now, originally, we were going to have David Dennis and Scott Bordas on the show. Dave's connection was unfortunately flaky, and Scott's just a flake. So next month on the show, we're going to be talking about, well, it's time we tackled it again. We're going to revisit one of our first year shows. This time, we're going to look at the franchise again as a whole, because now we have a little bit more time, more freedom, not half an hour. We're going to look at the franchise as a whole of Star Trek, because the Star Trek in the Darkness opening in theaters next month, it's going to be awesome. I'm excited for it. I've got my preview tickets, thanks to Ryan, actually.
Woohoo!
So I'm really pumped for this. It should be a fantastic movie. Early reviews are calling it really good, but some of them are also saying it's going to be polarizing. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, that was my review.
Yeah. So we're going to see what happens with that. Also, on Future Imperfect, we're going to be talking about just the new movie in specifically on Star Trek Into Darkness. Also coming up on the show, there will be a new episode of Last Exit to Ponyville coming up the first 2 weeks of May, give or take, talking about fan fiction and the wonderful community that's popped up around that. I'm really kind
of curious. Rule 34. Oh, sorry.
Actually, we do have plans to cover Rule 34 because you have to talk about it because it's just part of what it is.
Jurassic Park porn. I think that's the next logical step for Jurassic Park 4 that just occurred to me.
The rape tables have turned.
We've got to
see how those human raptor hybrids were created.
Oh, God. Ryan, you need to look up raptors and the rape tables have turned on Google.
Let's just say there's
a dark part of the internet I don't wish to revisit.
I'm getting kicked off of these shows again for this, aren't I? Oh, well.
You've Rule 34'd us. Anyway, guys, for This Week in Geek, we have been...
Ryan, the uneven flow. Woo, I said it first.
Andrew, the off... Never mind, Andrew.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't make it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico. Holy shit. Oh my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.